Hey there, this is Dr. Jared Tata, and today we'll be mapping chronic pain on the 15-Minute Matrix.
Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be talking with my friend, Dr. Joe Tata. Dr. Tata is founder of the Integrative Pain Science Institute, a doctor of physical therapy, and a board-certified nutrition specialist. He founded and managed a multi-clinic physical therapy and integrative wellness center that helped thousands of patients and trained practitioners. He learned what was missing from modern pain practice and deepened his commitment to reversing the pain epidemic. Dr. Tata is author of the number one best-selling book, Heal Your Pain Now. He is also host of the Healing Pain podcast, which features interviews with respected pain experts from around the world. You're going to want to pay close attention to the multifaceted approach to addressing chronic pain that we discuss in today's 15-Minute Matrix conversation. Let's get started. Hello, Joe. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Andrea. Great to be here with you.
So as a doctor of physical therapy who takes an integrative approach to pain care, I'm really excited to talk to you about your perspective on chronic pain, because for a lot of us in functional medicine, it's actually an often overlooked area. So when we're talking about chronic pain, what things should we be paying attention to?
So often we are looking at pain as a symptom,
right?
When actually it's a disease in and of itself, just like diabetes is a disease and Alzheimer's is a disease. Chronic pain is a disease of itself. So, you know, when you go to the antecedents first, it's important to realize that there are over 4,000 different genes that can turn chronic pain on, which is interesting. And you say, oh my God, well, what do I do with 4,000 genes? Can we test for that? But both you and I know, Andrea, that chronic pain is perhaps the most articulate version of a chronic lifestyle disease.
Right.
And with that, it responds really beautifully to lifestyle interventions, like we're going to talk about, say, in The Matrix. But of course, if you want to dive into an antecedent right away, it would be diet. That would be number one when we start talking about chronic pain.
And what would you consider an inflammatory diet?
When we look at diet through the lens of chronic pain, shall we say, there are a couple of key things to look at. One is the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. Mm. If that omega-6 ratio is really high, you can have a lot of arachidonic acid that's just floating around the system that excites what are called nociceptors, or basically receptors that send signals to the brain for pain. The second is a very low protein diet, which we still see sometimes, right? We still see people that are not eating enough just basic protein in their diet. I'm not a big fan of vegan or vegetarian diets, especially if you have chronic pain. And the answer is one, because most people with chronic pain don't move enough and they are suffering from what's called sarcopenia, which is a loss of muscle mass, and you need to have adequate protein to build muscle mass. And then two, all of those proteins make up all the different neurotransmitters and hormones that act for pain signaling throughout your entire body and nervous system. So we have, just to kind of review that, omega-6 to omega-3 ratio.
Yep.
Lack of protein, or we want to move toward a higher protein diet. And then I would say looking at things like magnesium and sodium and potassium balance are really important because, again, we're looking at key minerals that are important in the transmission of signals throughout the nervous system.
I'm so glad you brought these up. This brings us right back, like you said, to diet and lifestyle modification. And, you know, when we think about low protein, we can also be going right to the GI node on the matrix and thinking about protein absorption, because there are people who may be eating enough protein but not able to absorb it. Would you agree that that could be a contributing factor as well?
It's very true. And that's where we start to tie in kind of that gut-brain axis, because chronic pain is a stress. So we have financial stresses in life. We have stresses from family members. But just having chronic pain that you live with day in, day out is a stressor. And when that happens, one, your GI system just tends to slow down. So you lose the transit time throughout the gastrointestinal system. You lose all the enzymes that are naturally secreted, including pepsin, which breaks down protein in the stomach, is decreased.
Right.
And then ultimately it can lead to things like leaky gut and intestinal permeability, which we see all the time in patients that have fibromyalgia, which is probably the classic chronic pain disease, if you will.
When we're looking at this and we're thinking about triggers, because we're thinking about structural integrity, it could have been an accident of some sort, but what other triggers do you see leading people to having chronic pain?
There was a study done years ago that really looked into adverse childhood experiences.
Right.
So, you know, especially nowadays, we have so much going on in the media and the attention is turning towards kids and trauma, which it really should. But some of these early life triggers or these early life traumas, whether they're small or whether they're multiple larger ones, can be the precipitating factor to chronic pain happening, you know, later in teen years or perhaps in early adults. So, you know, trauma is really a big one. The other thing is when you live in a household where there's someone who has depression or there's someone who has anxiety, or there's someone who has a substance abuse problem, which is very common more and more in our society. Those are other traumas that you may not necessarily be taking in the drug yourself, but you're exposed to this entire environment, which is setting your nervous system up for a specific way to respond to future events in life.
That's such an interesting connection, Joe, with those adverse childhood experiences and the trauma and the way that the nervous system is established. I was going to ask you if you could kind of articulate that a little bit more. So is it because the nervous system is in a developmental stage that it then starts firing in a particular way that leads to that later chronic pain?
Yeah, we can get really deep into this topic, but I'm going to make this really simple for everyone. Your nervous system responds to two basic things, first and foremost, above anything. One is fear, and the other is love. Mm. So if you have multiple triggers in your life that make your brain constantly focused on fear, do I fear that my body is not safe? Do I fear that my parents don't take care of me? Do I fear that we are in financial struggle? Do I fear that the kids at school pick on me? Do I fear that my social support structure is not there? The brain becomes better and better at responding to that fear. Oftentimes, it will respond with anxiety. The flip side of that coin is if it's not anxiety, it will respond with chronic pain, kind of as a warning sign to say, hey, there's something in your environment that is causing fear or anxiety. And pain is really just meant to be a sign, kind of this flashing red light that says, hey, what's going on? What should we fix in the environment so that you feel safe? Or the better version of that is that you feel loved.
So amazing, because as you're talking, we are literally all over the matrix. We're in antecedents, we're in triggers, we're in mediators, we're in GI, we're in structural integrity, mind, spirit, emotions, community, certainly hormones and neurohormones. How about the immune system in terms of chronic pain? What's happening in that connection?
Your immune system and the immune cells in your nervous system become like a surveillance, actually. So where you have two nerve cells that come together, there's a synapse. In your nervous system, there's an immune cell that surrounds that synapse. And it kind of is like the gatekeeper, basically. It's kind of paying attention to what's going on there. So if you have high levels of glutamate in the central nervous system, which is excitatory, that immune system pays attention to it. And if those levels are too high, you start to get things like central sensitization or an overly stimulated central nervous system, and the immune system will start to produce inflammatory chemicals to try to fight that. Now, it doesn't do such a great job, and then there starts to become this battle of neurotransmitters and immune cells and cytokines. So there's really what they call this cytokine storm, if you will, happening
right.
in the central nervous system, which is really interesting because when we talk about the immune system in the brain and the central nervous system, where do we go from there? Well, we go right back down to the gut.
Right.
Because in the gut is where almost 90% of your serotonin is produced. And that serotonin can be very calming to a nervous system. So instead of prescribing a SSRI, which is a type of antidepressant medication,
right.
which doesn't work for people with chronic pain, we can look toward healing the gut. We could look toward that anti-inflammatory diet. We can go back, like we mentioned before, with protein and different types of minerals that will help shift those high levels of glutamate to a more balanced level between glutamate and GABA. And we know that GABA is very calming. It's very easing. It helps people relax. It helps your muscles release tension and tightness.
So as we're looking at this whole constellation of things that can lead to chronic pain, if we're thinking about two individuals that may actually have the same thing going on and respond differently to those levels of pain, is it a sensory response? Is it a neurological sense of the pain versus the pain itself?
That's one of the most key questions that every practitioner should ask themselves when they're working with someone with chronic pain. And actually, the definition of chronic pain is that it's both a sensory experience as well as an emotional experience.
Hmm.
So even if you have a particular pain condition that's occurring, someone's emotional response to that pain can make it better or it can make it worse. So when we look at things like stress and resiliency,
right.
when we look at the mind and emotions and support, and especially the psychosocial aspect of chronic pain is very, very, very important. And, you know, we see this in practice all the time where people come in, they have been on every type of anti-inflammatory diet. They have a bag full of supplements. They're still on certain pharmacologic medications to help with their pain. But yet what they haven't really kind of started to turn toward is what do they really value in life?
Mm.
Because when you have chronic pain that kind of chips away at you day after day, you start to move away from the things you used to love, and you now start to become really consumed with how do I control this pain? And that's why I love the mind and mindfulness-based approaches so much.
Yeah.
Because mindfulness-based approaches really tell you, let me start to slowly but compassionately open up to what's happening here. Let me become aware that I have this pain and that running from it hasn't worked. So let me slowly start to turn toward it and let's see how that changes it. If I can change my perspective with regard to pain, oftentimes you change your emotional response to it. And with that, the pain levels start to decrease.
So let's dive into that just a little bit more, because as you were talking, I was thinking this is all about resilience, right? Because two people can be having the same sensory response, but as you said, a different emotional response to that pain. So walking towards mindfulness, when somebody is in so much pain, what does it take for them to essentially take that on? Are they still looking for a quick fix, get me out of this pain, or is it the person who is fed up and realizes that nothing is working that's finally ready to take on that mindful practice?
Yeah, I'm going to use a word first that I recommend everyone add to their vocabulary, and that's willingness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's coaching someone through the steps and turning them to an aspect of being willing to now change their diet, being willing to work on their sleep, being willing to look at the toxic relationships in their life, being willing to look at the types of anger and resentment they have within themselves. Ultimately, what happens when they become willing to look at those things is a certain type of acceptance happens. And when you bring acceptance into the equation, people then say, okay, I no longer have to run from this pain. I realize that a lot of the suffering that I'm going through has a biological and a physical component to it. But there's also the psychosocial, the emotional component, that when I can turn to it and I can recognize that some of my thoughts are not helping me, they're always going to be there. But along with some of those negative thoughts, always exist the more positive ones, or the ones that help you cope better. And when you start to coach your patient toward that area, you're going to see things really start to change for people. And you can see people who've had chronic pain for decades, who have tried everything, and all of a sudden they say, it was just my perspective. As soon as I changed my perspective about what this is and became willing to start to work with it, instead of wrestling with it, arm wrestling with it on a daily basis, things started to change for me. I found out that sometimes life does involve pain, but doesn't necessarily mean that I have to lose the people in my life or the job that I have or the things that I love.
I love this, Joe. It's a really shift in our perspective. And one of the things that I have really appreciated about doing the 15-Minute Matrix podcast is how those practitioners, those of us who are having success in practice, we're not just caught in the biochemical information that's related to the this for that, the X for the Y, or the this is the symptom, this is what I do. We're looking at the whole picture. We're looking at things functionally. And it really does include the mind, body, spirit connection. We can't ignore it anymore. And you're speaking to that really beautifully. So thank you for mapping chronic pain on the matrix. To close us out, is there anything you feel like you didn't cover in particular that belongs on this matrix we've created?
I'm going to throw one really simple thing into the matrix that we didn't cover, and that's hydration. Mm. And it seems so simple. And we know so much about nutrition, but keep in mind, inside every one of your joints is synovial fluid. And that synovial fluid is like 99.9% just water. So just maintaining good hydration throughout the day oftentimes can help people with their pain and their stiffness. And it's the simplest thing that many practitioners overlook.
I love it. Thank you so much, Joe. Brilliant work.
Thanks, Andrea. Great being here with you.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there is a new podcast episode ready and waiting for you, just go to 15minutematrix.com/notify and let us know. We'll be sure to pop into your inbox with a really short reminder that a new episode is ready for you. You have an open invitation to email us. We want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can email us at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com.